Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Hey, Shireen.
Hi there. Welcome to another episode of Ethnically Ambiguous. Today, we are doing a deep dive on what's happening in East Turkestan, aka Xinjiang, these concentration camps.
They're holding Uyghur Muslims. Genocidal abuse at the hands of China, who does not like that these are Muslim people who follow a different religion that isn't the Chinese communist way of life.
Yeah, we get into the millions that are detained, what the concentration camps are like, as far as we know, and the forced labor that is coming out of them. And there are some personal accounts that are very jarring. And then we get into the surveillance state that China has implemented, as well as the involvement of the NBA. So stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi.
Hi.
In the middle of saying hi, I was like, I need to figure out a better way to say hi in the beginning of these episodes.
Blurry.
But hello, it's just the two of us today, and I'm actually feeling good about it. There's so much to talk about in the world. I think having these solo episodes once a month, I think it's a good call.
Yeah, no, it's nice to just like catch up with the world.
Yeah. And because there's so much going on, I feel like we could take one topic and really do a deep dive on anything right now, whether it's like Black Lives Matter or the death of all these people of color. But the thing that we've chosen to talk about in a deep dive today, it's probably somewhere in the title, but we're talking about what's happening in China. We're talking about the concentration camps and the forced labor that's happening. So that's what this episode is going to be about.
The Uyghur
Muslims
in China.
Yeah. We touched on this, I think it was last year when we first were aware of it, but it's been happening for years and we're glad it's getting more traction now. So we're just going to give you all the details about it so you guys can be informed, because it's bad. It's really fucking bad.
I realize I said in China. What I should say is by China in the East Turkestan region.
Yes,
right. Not technically China, but China has control over it.
Yes.
We'll get into all the details.
Nitty-gritties.
Yeah.
Yeah. The province is not technically in Chinese land, I suppose, but we'll get into it. But it is China that is abusing human rights, or like the Chinese government that's abusing human rights.
It's a genocide. Let's just say it for what it is.
Yeah.
It's a genocide of an ethnic group.
Yeah. Ethnic cleansing, genocide, a literal Holocaust. If you look up what the definition of Holocaust is, this is what it is. So should we just get into it?
Yeah, let's talk about it. I mean, we are going to be working off a few sources, but our main one is this Vox News source.
Yeah. That
basically breaks down every working aspect. We'll go into detail about certain parts of it, but yeah, we just thought this was the best roundup of everything to explain it as clear as possible. So shout out to Vox for doing the work and for allowing us to, we're using it as our source.
But it is a really good article, and it breaks down all these issues that are happening in East Turkestan. So it's called Concentration Camps and Forced Labor, China's Repression of the Uyghurs Explained. Also, just disclaimer up top, we're going to try to pronounce everything as best as we can. I have a little guide for ourselves at the top of this document, but we're trying our best. Apologies if we butcher anything. We're trying our best.
The region is called Xinjiang.
Mm-hmm.
That's what China refers to it. A lot of activists have been calling it East Turkestan because that's the original region before it was taken over by China. So I'm going to try and refer to it as East Turkestan to give some context. Like, it might get confusing at first if, you know, because it is they call it Xinjiang, China, but we are going to call it East Turkestan to kind of give it back to the people.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
So if one of us brings up either of those places, just they're the same thing.
Yeah.
You can use them interchangeably, but to honor the original land. I'll try as well to like also call it East Turkestan. So this article, it opens up with the story of how the Chinese government regularly detains citizens for speaking out in defense of the Uyghur Muslims and the Uyghur ethnic group. And it goes into detail about this guy, Ilham Toti. He was an economics professor and a prominent Uyghur intellectual in East Turkestan in China. And he ran a website called Uyghur Online, and it focused on the issues pertaining to the Muslim ethnic minority group. And so Chinese authorities had repeatedly shut down this website years ago. And his daughter, talking to the reporter, she's saying that her family received multiple death threats, and Chinese authorities also disappeared her father multiple times before detaining him in 2014. And then they found him guilty on charges of separatism. And after this charge, he was sentenced to life in prison. And at first, his daughter said that because her father was technically a political prisoner because of the charge of separatism, which just basically means dividing people's notions about the government, because he was a political prisoner, the family could visit him every few months. But then the Chinese government cut off access entirely, and she hasn't heard from him since 2017. And she's in the United States now, and she has still extended family in this region, which is the northwest part of China where most Uyghur Muslims live. She does not talk to any of her extended family because she said, quote, if they talk to me or if they receive a phone call from me, I don't think anything good will happen to them. And that's what she said over the phone to this Vox reporter.
Yes. So her father was targeted by the Chinese government for his advocacy of Uyghur rights, and but in recent years, the Chinese Communist Party has arbitrarily detained between 1 million and 3 million other Uyghurs in so-called re-education centers, that's in quotes, and forced them to undergo psychological indoctrination programs, such as studying communist propaganda and giving thanks to Chinese President Xi Jinping. Chinese officials have also reportedly used waterboarding and other forms of torture, including sexual abuse, as part of the indoctrination process. It is the largest mass internment of an ethnic religious minority group since World War II. So this has not happened since the Holocaust. And the fact that it resembles the Holocaust, I think, is very key, but still sad because no one's paying attention to it. The concentration camps are the most extreme example of China's inhumane policies against the Uyghurs. But even those outside the camps are subject to repressive policies. China has used mass surveillance to turn East Turkestan into a high-tech police state. And we will get further into that a little later.
Yeah. So the Uyghurs inside and outside the camps are both exploited for cheap labor. You might have seen some stuff if you guys are following us on Instagram or just are paying attention. They're forced to manufacture clothing and other products for sale both at home and abroad. Recently, the New York Times revealed that some Chinese-made face masks are being sold in the U.S. and other countries. They're being produced in factories that relied on the Uyghur Muslim labor, the forced labor. And other popular brands have been exposed using these camps, including H&M, Apple, Nike, and the statements of these brands we're going to talk about later on. But Nike did just come out with this like uplifting commercial recently about fighting racism. And I find it so hypocritical because they're still relying on cheap forced labor in these concentration camps. So just keep an open mind when you see these ads. Like, you have to question, especially these like massive brands, you have to question where, like, how their supplies are so cheap. Anyways, we'll talk about their statements further along this episode because both Nike and Apple released a statement. Anyways, another recent investigation found evidence that Chinese authorities, they subjected Uyghur women to mass sterilization, forcing them to take birth control and have abortions and putting them in camps if they resist. Some have argued this attempt to control the population meets the UN definitions of genocide, which I agree with, obviously.
Yeah, and the Chinese government, however, claims that the camps are merely vocational and training centers and that they're teaching people job skills. So yeah. It has justified the oppression in East Turkestan as an attempt to clamp down on terrorism and extremism emanating from the Uyghur separatist movement. And separatists is to like basically separate from a certain government, a group, a religion, gender, society, any sort of like group to separate from them. And that's China feels any sort of separatist movement to be basically like on par with terrorism. So there have been incidents of violent unrest over the years, including deadly terrorist attacks and at least one Uyghur extremist group in the region that goes by the East Turkestan Islamic Movement that has ties to Al-Qaeda and the global jihadist movement. But most experts say Beijing's repression and subjugation of the millions of Uyghurs is vastly disproportionate to the comparatively minor terror threat in the region. And as more and more reports of the atrocities happening in East Turkestan are revealed, the international community is grappling with how to punish China for its abuses. The United States finally imposed sanctions on Chinese officials involved in persecuting the Uyghurs and punished companies believed to be reliant on Uyghur forced labor. Advocates and bipartisan groups of lawmakers are calling for more forceful action, including putting greater pressure on major corporations to cut ties with the Chinese companies that coerce Uyghur labor.
And yet the persecution of the Uyghur Muslims continues, and in full view of the entire world. So the daughter I mentioned earlier, her name is Juher Ilham. Again, she's in the U.S., and now she's an activist for Uyghur rights. She says knowing what is happening to Uyghur Muslims, it makes her more determined to preserve her culture, her history, and her language. She says, quote, "I don't think there are any other words to put for this action. I think it's a genocide. It's genocide, period." And she's right. It's genocide. It's ethnic cleansing. This is the definition of wiping out an entire ethnic group.
Mm-hmm.
So why is China targeting the Uyghur Muslim population in East Turkestan? So East Turkestan, aka present-day Xinjiang, is where about 11 million Uyghur Muslims and other Muslim minorities live. It's the autonomous region in China's northwest that borders Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Mongolia. It has been under Chinese control since 1949, when the People's Republic of China was established. Uyghurs speak their own language. It's an Asian Turkic language similar to Uzbek, and most practice a moderate form of Sunni Islam. Some activists, including those who seek independence from China, refer to the region as we're calling it, East Turkestan.
Yes, yeah, so once situated along the ancient Silk Road trading route, East Turkestan is oil and resource rich. As it developed along with the rest of China, the region attracted more Han Chinese, a migration encouraged by the Chinese government. And that demographic shift inflamed ethnic tensions, especially with some of the larger cities. In 2009, for example, riots broke out in Urumqi. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but hopefully I am. The capital of East Turkestan, after Uyghurs protested their treatment by the government and the Han majority. About 200 people were killed and hundreds injured during the unrest. And the Chinese government blamed the protests on violent separatist groups, a tactic it would continue to use against the Uyghurs and other religious and ethnic minorities across China.
So the Chinese government justifies its clampdown on the Uyghurs and Muslim minorities by saying it's trying to eradicate extremism and separatist groups. It's basically attacking millions of people for the actions of a few, which is Islamophobia 101. These attacks, some violent by Uyghur separatists, have occurred in recent years, and some Uyghurs have foreign fighters joining groups like ISIS. But there's little evidence of any cohesive separatist movement with jihadi roots or otherwise that could challenge the Chinese government. This is what experts are telling this Fox reporter. There's very little evidence that there's any cohesive separatist movement with extremist groups or otherwise. So East Turkestan is also a major logistics hub for Beijing's ambitious Belt and Road Initiative. It's a $1 trillion infrastructure project along the Old Silk Road meant to boost China's economic and political influence around the world. East Turkestan's increasing importance to Chinese global aspirations is a major reason Beijing is exerting its control in the region. The region is critical to Chinese future development and the Belt and Road Initiative. This is what Drew C. Gladley, the professor of anthropology at Pomona College in Claremont, California, told the reporter. He studies this region, and he says all those roads go through East Turkestan.
Yeah, so these are some of China's de-extremification policies against the Uyghurs. So China's crackdown on the Uyghurs was initially part of a policy of de-extremification. Under this policy, Beijing imposed draconian restrictions in East Turkestan intended to erase the Uyghurs' Islamic religious and cultural identity, including imprisoning hundreds of thousands in so-called, in quotes, re-education camps. China has a dark history with re-education camps, combining hard labor with indoctrination to the party line. According to research by Adrian Zenz, a leading scholar on China's policy towards the Uyghurs and senior research fellow in China studies at the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, Chinese officials began using dedicated camps in East Turkestan around 2014, around the same time that China blamed a series of terrorist attacks on radical Uyghur separatists. In 2016, East Turkestan also got a new leader, a powerful Communist Party boss named Chen Kuangguo, whose previous job was restoring order and control to the restive region of Tibet. Chen has a reputation as a strong man and is somewhat of a specialist in ethnic crackdowns. The United States has placed human rights sanctions on Chen and other Chinese officials in East Turkestan earlier this month. Chen is responsible for the system that used technology to round up Uyghurs at such a rapid pace, not only in East Turkestan, but also similar models of convenience-style police stations were sort of tested in the Tibet region prior to being deployed in the East Turkestan context, said this is Olivia Enos, a senior policy analyst at the Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy at the Heritage Foundation.
So increased and aggressive mass surveillance and police presence accompanied his move to Xinjiang, including his quote-unquote grid management policing system. As The Economist reported, authorities divide each city into squares with about 500 people. Every square has a police station that keeps tabs on its inhabitants. So in rural areas, so does every village. Security checkpoints where residents must scan identification cards were set up by train stations on roads in and out of towns. Authorities have reportedly used facial recognition technology to track down residents' movements, and Chinese officials also reportedly took blood and DNA samples, framed as mandatory checkups, which is very, very shady business. Mm-hmm. Police also confiscate phones to download the information contained on them to scan through later to track and keep tabs on Uyghurs through their cell phones. Police have also confiscated passports to prevent them from traveling abroad, and the Uyghur population that live abroad say their families are targeted by Chinese officials as part of a pressure campaign to keep the diaspora from speaking out.
Mm. So some of the targeted de-extremification restrictions gained coverage in the West, including a ban on certain Muslim names for babies and another on long beards and veils. The government reportedly tried to promote drinking and smoking because people who don't drink and smoke, like devout Muslims, were deemed suspicious. So in October 2019, Radio Free Asia, a news agency backed by the U.S. government, also reported that Han Chinese men were being sent to check in on and sometimes sleep with Uyghur women, including those whose husbands were detained in the camps. It was called the Pair Up and Become Family Program, and it was designed to promote ethnic unity, one local official explained.
Mm. That is so disturbing. So Chinese officials have justified these policies as necessary to counter religious radicalization and extremism, but critics say they are meant to curtail Islamic traditions and practices. And that should be obvious to anyone listening. There is no logic behind any of this. It is so just a violation of every human right. The ultimate goal, the ultimate issue that the Chinese state is targeting is the cultural practices and beliefs of Muslim groups. This is what James Millward, the professor at Georgetown University, told its reporter in 2018. He went on to say the Chinese government is trying to expunge ethno-national characteristics from the people. They're trying to drive them out of the country. They're trying to hold them in. So let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll go into what we know and what we don't know about these concentration camps. We're back. Okay, so what do we know and what do we don't know about these concentration camps that exist in East Turkestan? So these re-education camps, aka these training camps that they're called in China, or by Chinese officials, they're perhaps the most sinister pillar of this de-extremification policy. Experts estimate as many as 3 million people have disappeared into these camps at some point, with about 1 million currently still being held. Really think about that. 1 million are currently being held, with 3 million just disappearing. And at first, the Chinese government denied these camps ever existed. China's state-run media at one time dismissed the reports of detention camps as Western media, quote, baselessly criticizing China's human rights.
Yeah, but China has since stopped pretending that the camps aren't real. And instead, the government is trying to cast them as both lawful and innocuous. In October 2018, Chinese officials effectively legalized the education camps for the stated goal of eradicating extremism. So later that month, a government official in East Turkestan, who was himself an ethnic Uyghur, compared the detention centers to boarding schools and its detainees to students. Many trainees have said that they were previously affected by extremist thought and have never participated in such kinds of arts and sports activities. Now they realize how colorful life can be. That was the East Turkestan governor, Shorat Zakir. That's what they told Xinhua, a Chinese state-run news agency. What's really going on in the camps is difficult to know because of China's disinformation campaign and the tight clampdown on information, but leaked official documents and chilling firsthand accounts from people detained in the camps have helped provide outside experts and researchers put together a disturbing portrait of the abuses that take place there. And these camps are much more like prisons than so-called boarding schools, obviously. A 2018 report by Agence France-Presse describe the camps in which thousands of guards carry spiked clubs, tear gas, and stun guns to surveil detainees, who are held in buildings surrounded by razor wire and infrared cameras. AFP, Agence France-Presse, which I think that's how it's pronounced, very French. The journalists also reviewed public documents showing that government agencies overseeing the camps purchased 2,768 police batons, 550 electric cattle prods, and 1,367 pairs of handcuffs and 2,792 cans of pepper spray.
An investigation by Reuters in 2018 also found that, according to satellite imagery, 39 suspected camps almost tripled in size between April 2017 and August 2018. The report said, quote, collectively, the built-up parts in these 39 facilities now cover an area roughly the size of 140 soccer fields. In 2019, another set of leaked documents revealed how tightly controlled the camps are. According to the BBC, detainees were, quote, never allowed to escape, and their behavioral violations would face discipline and punishment. The documents ordered surveillance of dorm rooms and classrooms. Leaked drone footage, believed to be recorded last August, appears to show hundreds of Uyghur prisoners blindfolded and handcuffed being transferred by train. And then, in February 2020, a leaked 137-page spreadsheet from the Karakax County in East Turkestan showed exactly how Uyghur families are tracked by authorities. The spreadsheet contained 300 names of Uyghur families, including the identities of people committed to concentration camps and those whom officials were monitoring. Some of those being tracked were as young as 16 years old.
So among the things that caught the attention of authorities were obtaining a passport, whether or not they had traveled, praying regularly, or even wearing a beard, according to the New York Times. Family members were monitored for participating in religious ceremonies like funerals or weddings. Uyghurs were also sent to camps if they violated China's birth restrictions. According to research by Zenz and the Associated Press in June 2020, in a bolstered finding, they found that Chinese officials were systematically trying to stop Uyghur women from having children under the threat of internment if they violated the rules. According to the report, the state regularly subjects minority women to pregnancy checks and forces intrauterine devices, sterilization, and even abortion on hundreds of thousands, the interviews and data shows. Even while the use of IUDs and sterilization has fallen nationwide, it is sharply rising in East Turkestan, and the research backs up anecdotal reports from women detained in the camps who say they were forced to undergo examinations and abortions.
In December 2017, Gulzirha Mogdan, she's a 38-year-old ethnic Kazakh and Chinese citizen, she was detained in East Turkestan and put under house arrest. In December 2017, Gulzirha Mogdan, a 38-year-old ethnic Kazakh and a Chinese citizen, she was detained in East Turkestan and put under house arrest. She told the Washington Post in October 2019 that during her detention, she'd been forced to undergo a physical examination. She was 10 weeks pregnant at the time, and a month later, the doctors terminated her pregnancy against her will. Two humans were lost in this tragedy, my baby and me. That's what she said in October 2019. And inside these camps, detainees are reportedly subjected to bizarre exercises aimed at, quote, brainwashing them, as well as physical torture, rape, sleep deprivation, and more. Millward, the Georgian professor from earlier, he said the Chinese authorities see the camps as a kind of conversion therapy, and they talk about it in that way as well. A source also told Radio Free Asia in 2018 that a Chinese official had referred to these re-education processes as similar to, quote, spraying chemicals on the crops. That is why it is general re-education, not limited to a few people.
So the Washington Post published an account from Kairat Samarkand, who was detained in one of the camps for 3 months. The 30-year-old stayed in a dormitory with 14 other men. After the room was searched every morning, he said, the day began with 2 hours of study on subjects including the spirit of the 19-party Congress, where Xi expounded his political dogma in a three-hour speech, and China's policies on minorities and religion. Inmates would sing communist songs, chant Long Live Xi Jinping, and do military-style training in the afternoon before writing their accounts of their day. That's what he said. He goes on to say, those who disobeyed the rules, refused to be on duty, engaged in fights, or were late for studies were placed in handcuffs and ankle cuffs for up to 12 hours. That's what he told the Washington Post. At a July 2018 hearing of the Congressional Executive Commission on China, a special bipartisan committee set up by Congress to monitor human rights in China, Jessica Botke, a former research analyst at the State Department, testified that in at least some of these facilities, detainees are subject to waterboarding, being kept in isolation without food and water, and being prevented from sleeping. They are interrogated about their religious practices and about having made trips abroad. They are forced to apologize for their clothes they wore or for praying in the wrong place at the wrong time.
So, as we mentioned before, the forced labor of the Uyghur Muslims has been increasing over recent years. Beyond the detention camps, there is now growing evidence that Uyghurs are being forced to work in the Chinese factories. Given the ubiquity of Chinese manufacturing, that almost certainly means that the exploitation of Uyghurs is embedded with the global supply chain. Nuri Turkel, the chair of the board of the Uyghur Human Rights Project, told Congress in 2019, it is becoming increasingly hard to ignore the fact that goods manufactured in East Turkestan have a high likelihood of being produced with forced labor. He is also someone that refers to the region as East Turkestan. And the forced labor is happening within both East Turkestan and other parts of China, according to recent reports. In March 2020, a report from the Congressional Executive Commission on China also found that Uyghur forced labor was taking place within the internment camps.
Oh, yeah, yeah. According to a report from the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, ASPI, at least 80,000 Uyghurs were taken from East Turkestan and transferred to various factories around China between 2017 and 2019, though it's likely that's a lowball estimate. Some Uyghurs were taken directly from concentration camps to the factories, though the conditions mirrored those they faced in detention, according to the same study. Uyghurs were under constant surveillance, forced to undergo Mandarin language instruction and other political teachings in their free time. Most critically, they cannot leave. In July 2019, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation reported a story of a Uyghur woman, 38-year-old Dil Noor, who was sent to an internment camp along with her husband. In May, Dil Noor had contacted her sister in Australia to tell her she'd be taken from the camps and sent to work in a technology factory in Urumqi. 660 people are brought in, shackled and handcuffed, and it is big, she wrote. Again, it's hard to get full information out of China's tightly controlled system, but leaked documents and testimony from some workers who have been forced into factories offer compelling evidence. The revelations raise serious questions for the global supply chain and anyone who buys goods that is at one point passed through China.
The ASPI found that at least 27 suspected factories are using laborers from East Turkestan, which potentially have connections to 83 major global brands. The East Turkestan region, specifically, is a major cotton hub for China, meaning that East Turkestan cotton might end up being in the final products of many clothing lines. The Washington Post and the ASPI also found that the South Korean-owned Qingdao Taekwang Shoes in Liaoning, China, again, apologies of mispronouncing these words, but basically this company has been the Nike supplier for decades. It's been employing about 700 Uyghur workers. Though they cannot confirm that the Uyghurs were forced to work, eyewitnesses told the Post that the workers weren't allowed to leave freely. And Nike has since said that it's in contact with its suppliers to, quote, assess potential risks related to the employment of Uyghur Muslims. Other companies, like Apple, have said that they have found no evidence of forced labor, but they are monitoring their sources.
So another recent investigation by the New York Times found that forced Uyghur labor is being used to make personal protective equipment, specifically those disposable surgical face masks that are very common in the time of COVID-19, obviously. Just last week, more than 72 Uyghur rights groups and 100 civil society groups worldwide launched a campaign to end forced Uyghur labor, demanding companies stop sourcing cotton, yarn, textiles, and finished products from East Turkestan, and for companies to cut ties with suppliers implicated in forced labor schemes. Now that the world is, you know, actually paying more attention to Uyghurs, in my opinion, because someone was like, we have to say no to Nike, and then everyone's like, wait, what? Not my Nike. What's going on? That's truly my theory. It's like no one cared until people were like, Nike's using them. And then all of a sudden people were like, wait a second, I'm listening. We need to stop this.
Yeah. No one cared until their favorite brands were involved.
Yeah, until someone was like, Adidas? I think Adidas actually got actively out of it. But
yeah.
Zubaira Shamsuddin, a Chinese outreach coordinator with the Uyghur Human Rights Project, told me that Uyghurs have faced discrimination for years in education and employment. It just didn't get the attention of the world, she said. And recent headlines, including those about birth control and forced sterilization, have helped change that. But she said anyone who really tried to see what was happening in East Turkestan could see if they looked. It's clear. It's there. It's just crystal clear, she said, adding that China is still denying all of it.
That the world is finally starting to pay attention is important, but it's not nearly enough. Activists say that governments and international institutions need to do more to pressure China. Uyghurs in the diaspora are pushing for the International Criminal Court to investigate China for genocide and other atrocities. Naomi Kickloller, the director at the Simon Scott Center for the Prevention of Genocide at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, she said in March that there are, quote, reasonable grounds to believe that China is responsible for crimes against humanity. However, because China doesn't recognize the ICC's jurisdiction, that method might have its limits. And some U.S. lawmakers have been pushing for the U.S. to get tougher on China about the Uyghur issue, aka the genocide. And the State Department has advocated for the Uyghurs to be a part of its religious freedom initiatives.
But President Trump has been pretty quiet on the topic, and it seems his desire to negotiate a trade deal with China was a big reason why. Well, we're kind of in the middle of a major trade deal, Trump said in June. That was a bad Trump impression. When asked why he hadn't imposed U.S. Treasury sanctions on Chinese officials involved in the repression of the Uyghurs. Trump's former national security advisor, John Bolton, also alleged that Trump personally gave Xi Jinping the green light to keep building the camps, telling Xi at a meeting in June 2019 that it was exactly the right thing to do. The meeting was attended by only the two leaders and their interpreters, so Bolton is relying on what the interpreter told him after the meeting. Other U.S. officials have denied Bolton's account. In June, however, Trump signed into law the Uyghur Human Rights Policy Act of 2020, which imposes sanctions on foreign individuals and entities involved in abuses in East Turkestan and requires the president to periodically send Congress a list of identifying foreign individuals and entities responsible for such human rights abuses. Since then, the U.S. has sanctioned officials including Chen Quanggao, who's in charge of East Turkestan and the master behind the surveillance policies. The U.S. also placed sanctions on East Turkestan's Public Security Bureau and its director, Wang Mingshan, under the Global Magnitsky Act, which targets human rights abusers around the world.
The U.S. sanctions angered China, and Beijing retaliated by sanctioning U.S. officials, including Marco Rubio and Chris Smith, who are Republican representatives.
Like, good job. The two people who, like, don't matter. Okay.
I know, exactly. Like, who... Chris Smith is the most generic name regardless. I would not know who that was unless I read this article.
Yeah.
Regardless, they have been the most prominent voices in Congress condemning China's abuses of Uyghur Muslims. So at least they're doing something right.
That is surprising. Marco Rubio is surprising. Involved in that.
Yeah. And that definitely surprised me as well because they're just so, they're just fucking dolts. I don't know. Mm-hmm. The U.S. also blacklisted 11 Chinese companies in July because of their ties to human rights abuses in East Turkestan, which means these companies can't easily access U.S. technology or products. At least 9 of the companies had ties to forced Uyghur labor, including some named in the ASPI report that were connected to major clothing brands. From what I remember, a lot of them were like these fast fashion companies, including like H&M. Wow. So, I mean, this just goes to show any fast fashion, whether it's like cheaply made, you can tell. I would just urge you guys to not use fast fashion, essentially, because it's never a good method of making these items.
Yeah.
2 others were added to the list because of their use of, quote, genetic analysis that targeted Muslim minority groups.
But the Trump administration's tougher approach towards China on the Uyghur issue also comes as the administration has sought to put increasing pressure on China over its handling of the coronavirus pandemic. Tensions between Washington and Beijing are escalating, and the tit-for-tat is sinking the relationship between the two superpowers. According to Gladney of Pomona College, I am concerned that once again the Uyghurs are not being taken seriously in and of themselves, rather than being used as kind of a pawn in a larger geopolitical strategy. But pressure on China for its human rights abuses, both in East Turkestan and in Hong Kong, should be a priority for the U.S. administration. I definitely think that there is an effort to squeeze China in any way that can possibly be done, Eno said of the United States. But I think there's also this broader recognition that what's going on in East Turkestan is definitely among some of the worst human rights atrocities taking place, certainly in this decade, maybe even in our generation. Hard to say. So new details about the atrocities inside the camps have added even more of a sense of urgency. Bipartisan lawmakers have signed on to the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act, which would require that companies prove any products sourced from East Turkestan did not involve forced labor and would compile a list of Chinese companies that relied on forced labor. Senators have also urged the Trump administration to make a formal declaration that atrocity crimes are happening in East Turkestan. Some advocates are also calling on its consumers to boycott products that may have been made with Uyghur labor.
And economic pressure, especially if it forces major corporations to break ties with some Chinese suppliers, it may be one of the most effective tools, though that is increasingly challenging in a world that is consumed by the COVID pandemic and an economic catastrophe. But the pandemic itself, Shamsuddin of the Uyghur Human Rights Project told the reporter at Vox that the pandemic itself is yet another reason for urgency. She saw it as a potential reason for China's government to escalate its crackdown under the guise of quarantine for COVID-19. Quote, she said, it's going to be another good excuse to just detain people arbitrarily.
Yeah.
And the previous point about economic pressure, I think boycotting has been a tool that many people use as a form of resistance. We see it in Palestine, we see it with BDS. Yeah. And similar to that, you vote with your dollar kind of thing. So you put economic pressure on these corporations to break ties that are problematic and abusing human rights and taking advantage of a minority group. Yeah. But I think at the same time, it's very hard to do that in the current climate. But
I know
we're going to get into some more elements of all of this after one more break. We'll be right back.
And we are back. I kind of wanted to go into detail about the surveillance because I think it's so Orwellian and it's like right out of 1984 that it's actually very terrifying. So the guy who basically came up with how to police Tibet is the same guy involved, Chen Qingko. I'm sorry, I should have looked up how to say his name. But yeah, they've turned East Turkestan into one of the most technologically advanced police states, frequently described as an open-air prison. And while some of the Uyghur and Turkic people have not been detained in concentration camps, they are in no sense free. At the beginning of 2017, China invested $8.4 billion into internal security in East Turkestan in order to monitor and police every aspect of life for minorities. And this surveillance applies military cyber systems, to civilian public security, targeting ethnic minorities while ignoring the majority Han Chinese, who make up a little less than half of East Turkestan's population. And they have checkpoints, and the checkpoints are manned by armed police that are stationed at neighborhood entrances and exits, banks, parks, schools, gas stations, and mosques where Uyghurs and other Turkic people have to swipe an identity card to pass, like we said earlier. But the Han Chinese are not subjected to the same surveillance and are waved through green channels at checkpoints. And the green channels, like, you're good to go. And identification cards are also needed to buy simple commodities like phones, computers, sugar, knives, and gasoline. And there are over 10,000 checkpoints in the capital, Urumqi, each guarded by over 24 police officers 24 hours a day. Then they also have spyware. So the Uyghurs are forced to install a mobile spyware app called Jingwang Weishi, which monitors phone activity and sends data unencrypted to a government server. And the content, authorities basically deem alerts the CCP in the system. And then it allows authorities to decide whether the person should be sent to a concentration camp. And the content includes pictures of Quranic verses, Islamic symbols, such as the crescent, moon, and the star, and any communication with family and friends from overseas. And spot checks are done on the streets and at checkpoints to check that the app is actually downloaded. And those who do not have the app downloaded are subject to detainment. And then they also have biometric screenings. And since 2017, the state has collected millions of DNA samples, fingerprints, blood type data, and iris biometrics without consent under a, in quotes, mandatory free medical checkups. And while it is currently unclear what the data is being used for, sources believe that the data is being utilized to create facial recognition systems for racial profiling of the Uyghurs and for tracking of every aspect of their daily lives. And this data is stored even if they leave East Turkestan. And this bio data is also believed to be used for DNA phenotyping, I don't know what that means, i.e. identifying physical traits that characterize the Uyghur people based on genetic trends. DNA phenotyping can also be used to create generalized filters that subject people to different restrictions and treatment by the government based on their ethnicity. Jesus Christ. While there are questions surrounding the effectiveness of phenotyping technology, it raises ethical concerns on how this technology can be used to repress and control the Uyghur population. Also, travel restrictions. WeChat messaging platform was frequently used by Uyghurs to exchange Quranic verses and lectures and to learn more about Islam. This platform is now being used against them by the CCP as their conversations are labeled as suspicious. And control is now exerted on Uyghurs traveling outside of East Turkestan through effectively denying them the right to a passport. Instead, they are given one-day travel documents and then are required to return to China to renew passports, where they face the risk of landing in the concentration camps. And this has already happened to students studying overseas. And not having proper documentations overseas puts Uyghurs at a disadvantage where they may be unable to get a job, a house, or married. And China has pressured countries worldwide to deport Uyghurs living abroad and Uyghur refugees back to China, where they risk punishment from the CCP. And on top of that, there's one more thing. They have civilian informants. Guys, this is like in 1984, where your own kids could turn on you and report you. So 1 million civilian workers have been sent as government informants to live in the homes of the Uyghurs to assess loyalty to the CCP. And that's the Chinese Communist Party, if I didn't say that. Informants report on how likely the Uyghurs are to challenge the communist state, how well they assimilate into the Chinese culture, and how religious they are. And the workers follow manuals that not only collect information about the lifestyles of Uyghurs, but also provide instructions for how to pressure the Uyghurs into exposing themselves. It's like mind games. And this is yet another tactic by the CCP that they use to monitor the Uyghurs and is one way for the Chinese government to determine who will be sent to the camps and who will be allowed to stay in their homes with their families. Like, that's unbelievable. That's what we all feared when we read 1984. Yeah. We're like, no, that could never happen. Hilarious Orwell. It's happening right now in East Turkestan.
Yeah. So it's important to recognize the surveillance and the policing efforts by the Chinese government exerts to subjugate the Turkic groups in East Turkestan. Without raising awareness about this, we risk ignoring the mobilization of China's forced assimilation to continue occupying East Turkestan and normalizing invasive police states, because it sounds like a made up story that we read in a book, but it's actually happening on this planet. It's just the most atrocious form of control, and it's so sinister. It's the worst use of technology. It's really terrifying. But one other thing we wanted to bring up about this was a story that we heard that involved the NBA. So long before a tweet in October of last year, it was supporting the Hong Kong protesters. It spotlighted the NBA's complicated relationship with China. The NBA faced complaints from its own employees over human rights concerns inside an NBA youth development program in China. That's what an ESPN investigation found. American coaches at three NBA training academies in China told league officials that their Chinese partners were physically abusing young players and failing to provide schooling, even though Commissioner Adam Silver said that the education would be central to the program, according to multiple sources with direct knowledge of these complaints. The NBA ran into a myriad of problems by opening one of the academies in East Turkestan, the place where the majority of Uyghur Muslims live, and now they're being held in barbed wire concentration camps. American coaches were frequently harassed and surveilled in East Turkestan, the sources said, and one American coach was detained three times without a cause, and he and others were unable to obtain housing because of their status as foreigners. A former league employee compared the atmosphere when he worked in East Turkestan to World War II Germany.
In an interview with ESPN about its findings, NBA Deputy Commissioner and Chief Operating Officer Mark Tatum, who oversees international operations, said the NBA is reevaluating and considering other opportunities for the academy program, which operates out of the sports facilities run by the Chinese government. Last week, the league acknowledged for the first time that it had closed the East Turkestan Academy, but when pressed, Tatum declined to say whether human rights were a factor. "We were somewhat humbled," Tatum said of the academy project in China. "One of the lessons that we've learned here is that we need to have more direct oversight and the ability to make staffing changes when appropriate." The program, launched in 2016 as part of NBA's strategy to develop local players in the basketball-obsessed market, which has made NBA China a $5 billion enterprise. Most of the former employees spoke on the condition of anonymity. I can never say that word. Because they feared damaging their chances for future employment. NBA officials asked current and former employees not to speak with ESPN for this story. And in an email to one former coach, public relations officials added, "Please don't mention that you have been advised by the NBA not to respond." God, the shade is so real. But then one American coach who worked for the NBA in China described the project as a sweat camp for athletes. Yeah.
At least two coaches left their positions in response to what they believed was mistreatment of young players. One requested and received a transfer after watching Chinese coaches strike teenage players, three sources told us to ESPN. Another American coach left before the end of his contract because he found the lack of education in the academies unconscionable. "I couldn't continue to show up every day," he said, "looking at these kids and knowing they would end up being taxi drivers."
Oof. Well, that's assuming.
I mean, yeah, that's I don't know. It's a crazy statement to make.
Yeah. okay.
But not long after the academies opened, multiple coaches complained about the physical abuse and the lack of schooling to Greg Stolt, the league's vice president for international operations for NBA China, and to other league officials in China. It was unclear whether the information was passed on to NBA officials in New York, but the NBA declined to make Stolt available for comment. Two of the former NBA employees separately told ESPN that coaches at the academies regularly speculated whether Silver had been informed of the problems. One of the employees said, "If Silver ever shows up, we're all fired immediately."
It's weird. Tatum said the NBA received a handful of complaints that Chinese coaches had mistreated young players and immediately informed local authorities that the league had zero attendance for behavior that was anti-ethical to our values. Tatum said the incidents were not reported at the time to league officials in New York, including himself or Silver. That's so weird. Such bullshit. I just don't believe it, you know? Yeah. "I will tell you that the health and wellness of academy athletes and everyone who participates in our program is of the utmost priority," Tatum said. Tatum identified four separate incidents, though he said only one was formally reported in writing by an NBA employee. On three of the occasions, the coaches reported witnessing or hearing about physical abuse. The fourth incident involved a player who suffered from heat exhaustion. We did everything that we could, given the limited oversight we had, Tatum said. Three sources who worked for the NBA in China told ESPN the physical abuse by Chinese coaches was much more prevalent than the incidents Tatum identified.
The NBA also brought in elite coaches and athletic trainers with experience in G League and Division I basketball to work at the academies. One former coach described watching a Chinese coach fire a ball into a player's voice at point-blank range and then, quote, kick him in the gut. The coach said, imagine you have a kid who's 13, 14 years old, and you've got a grown coach who's 40 years old hitting your kid. We're a part of that. The NBA is a part of that. And it's common for Chinese coaches to discipline players physically, according to several people with experience in player development in China. Jinming Zhang, an assistant professor of sports management at Northumbria University in England, he grew up in mainland China and has written extensively about the Chinese sports systems. He said, for most of the older generation, even my grandparents, they take corporal punishment for granted and even see it as an expression of love and care. But I know it might be criticized for people living outside of China. The older generation will see it as an integral part of training. And in 2012, the NBA hired Bruce Palmer to work as a technical director at a private basketball school in Dongguan in southern China. The program predated the academies, and the school had a sponsorship agreement that paid the NBA nearly $200,000 a year and allowed the school to bill itself as an NBA training center.
Yeah, so Palmer spent 5 years in Dongguan, and he said he repeatedly warned Chinese coaches not to hit, kick, or throw balls at children. After one incident, he said he told a coach, you can't do that to your kid. This is an NBA training center. If you really feel like hitting a 14-year-old boy and you think it's going to help him or make him feel better, take him off campus, but not here, because the NBA does not allow this. Why the fuck would you tell him to take him off campus? Palmer said the school's headmaster told him that hitting kids has been proven to be effective as a teaching tool. Jesus Christ. The issue was so prevalent in the NBA academies that coaches repeatedly told NBA China officials, including Stolt, for direction on hand how to handle what they saw as physical abuse, according to three sources. The coaches were told to file written reports to the NBA office in Shanghai. One coach said that he encountered no more issues after filing a report, but others said the abuse continued. We weren't responsible for the local coaches. We didn't have the authority, Tatum said. We don't have the oversight of the local coaches, of the academic programs, or the living conditions. It's fair to say we were less involved than we wanted to be. In East Turkestan, players lived in cramped dormitories. The rooms were meant for two people, but a former coach said bunk beds were used to put as many as 8 to 10 athletes in a room. Players trained 2 to 3 times a day and had few extracurricular activities. NBA coaches and officials became concerned that although education had been announced as a pillar of the academy program, the sports bureaus did not provide formal schooling. When the players, some as young as 13, weren't training, eating, or sleeping, they were often left unsupervised.
Tatum said the NBA was not aware of political tensions or human rights issues in East Turkestan when it announced it was launching the training academy there in 2016. In August 2018, Slate published an article under the headline, Why is the NBA in East Turkestan? Well, the headline said, Why is NBA in Xinjiang? The league is running a training center in the middle of the world's largest humanitarian atrocities. Then later, the NBA would receive criticism from congressional leaders, but it never addressed the concerns or said anything about the status of the facility until July of 2020. When he was pressed by ESPN, Tatum repeatedly avoided questions whether the widespread human rights abuses in East Turkestan played a role in closing the academy. Instead, he cited, quote, many factors. He said, my job, our job, is to take a position on every single human rights violation, and I'm not an expert in every single human rights situation or violation. I'll tell you what the NBA stands for. The values of the NBA are about respect, inclusion, and diversity. That is what we stand for.
And for finding the next Yao Ming, regardless of what is happening to your players. Oh, yep. Weird. I just added that. Nuri Turkle, a Uyghur American activist who has been heavily involved in lobbying the U.S. government on Uyghur rights, told ESPN before the NBA said it had left East Turkestan that he believed the league had been indirectly legitimizing crimes against humanity. Even though the NBA now says it left East Turkestan in the spring of 2019, the league did not respond to the letter. The East Turkestan Academy webpage disappeared soon after. Last week, in response to Senator Blackburn of Tennessee, the league wrote, the NBA has no involvement with the East Turkestan Basketball Academy for more than a year, and the relationship has been terminated. John Palmfrey, whose 2016 book, The Beautiful Country and the Middle Kingdom, covering the history of the U.S.-China relationship, called the decision to put the academy in East Turkestan a huge mistake that made the NBA a party to a massive human rights violation.
Two sources disputed that the NBA had any plans to leave East Turkestan in the spring of 2019. One coach said the league was still seeking other coaches to move there well into the summer and that the league's statement to Blackburn was, quote, completely inaccurate. The coach said, they are still trying to get people to go out there. It didn't end because Tatum said, we're going to end this.
That article goes on much longer. I kind of cut it short because I knew we wouldn't have a ton of time to cover it, but it will be in our footnotes if you want to go and read more about the NBA low-key lying about being part of a human rights atrocity.
Yeah. It's good to just bring up all the different elements that are involved in legitimizing the human rights abuses that China continues to inflict on specifically Uyghur Muslims in East Turkestan. But I hope you guys got good information out of this episode. There's so much to cover. Again, the article that we were sourcing for the majority of this will be in our footnotes, as long as all the other sources we pulled from. But I encourage you to just stay informed and know what's going on and educate your friends and family about this, because it's really disgusting what's going on. It's a literal Holocaust. Like, we learn about the Holocaust being the most atrocious thing to ever happen in our modern history. And it's happening again. It's happening again. It's just far away from you and people don't look like you. It's, I think it's hard to sympathize when something is far away or something doesn't involve you directly, but it's so important to just remember these are human beings and they're targeted for things that are not, no one should be in a concentration camp. Like, no one.
No one.
It's disgusting.
We hope this was informative. We hope it really broke it down for you.
Yeah.
I'm glad we could spend an entire episode on it because there's so much, you know, like you were saying. Yeah.
And I even feel like we kind of glossed over some stuff in this. Like, even though we've been talking for over an hour, there's so much to unpack. Like, there's so much more. And that's why we always encourage you guys to just use this as like a launching pad to do your own education of yourselves. And especially, I feel like Black Lives Matter has made a good effort in the value of educating yourself. And so use that same initiative and momentum to educate yourself on everything else that's going on in the world, because that's the only reason we make any change, is by educating ourselves and understanding the importance of learning about if Nike is using forced labor and why we shouldn't use, like, you shouldn't buy Nike unless they fix that. You know what I mean? Don't buy into their stupid, like, anti-racist ad, which is powerful if it didn't fucking use forced labor. You know what I mean? So I guess what I'm trying to say is just stay skeptical, stay informed, and don't just blindly think that you're being woke by reposting a Nike ad that uses both black and white people. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah, so thanks so much for following. Check out our footnotes for more information. You can follow us at EthnicallyAmBig on Instagram. You can follow us at EthnicallyAmb on Twitter. You can email us at EthnicallyAmBig@gmail.com if you want to. I don't know. It's totally up to you. You can check our website, EthnicallyAmbiguousPod.com. And I am at Anna Hostney on Twitter.
And I am at ShiroHero666 on Twitter and ShiroHero on Instagram. Next time we do a solo episode, we'll read some of these very nice reviews that we've been getting. They really mean a lot to us, and we see every single one. So if you guys have a chance, write us a review on your podcast app or Apple Podcasts or even Facebook. And until next time.
Stay informed.
Yeah.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.